Okay, this is the time and place scheduled for the monthly board meeting of Vanguard Academy. It's Tuesday, October 30th, just after 6:30 PM. And we'll call the meeting to order and go ahead and do a roll call first. This is David Kingston, Vice Chairman. Chair around the table.
Eric Freeman, Board Member.
Tony Jenkins, School Counselor.
Darren Jenkins, Board Member.
Stephanie Evans, Minute Taker.
Marie Evans, Operations.
Grace Mitchell, Treasurer.
Scott Kingston, Board Member.
Kathleen Kingston, Assistant Director. I would move you. Assessment.
And Suzanne Owen, Director.
Okay, Ken Johnson told me he wasn't able to be here today, so for the record, he's asked me to fill in for him. Do we have a flag in the room? We'll open up the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So go ahead and open up the meeting for public comment. Anybody have any public comments? If not, we'll go ahead and close the public comment period and move to the next item. We'll review the minutes from last time's board meeting, which was on August 28th. Everyone could look at that. And
a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second. Okay, all in favor of approving last time's minutes?
Yes.
Any opposed? A motion to pass to approve last time's minutes. Next item on our agenda to clear in the open points, it looks like. First one is an item opened by Kim Mangum, who's not here yet. We need to talk about that. I guess it was assigned to Suzanne to come up with how we're going to.
Yeah, it's been an ongoing open point that we always and every day and all the time want to have that excellence in here, and we're working on it.
We have been, in addition to doing it in our teachers' Friday meetings, then we've also started adding things into our leadership podcast that all of the kids see. Kind of shout outs and celebrations of excellence that we see through the building.
Any other specific items on that we want to cover?
You guys are having an awards ceremony this Friday?
Honor roll.
Recognizing quarterly honor roll. This would be the first time.
I saw that notice. I was really happy to see that. That's a good idea.
So the report cards were emailed earlier, and then the notice went out if you had an honor roll student, then we are going to do a quarterly honor roll this year.
That's a great idea.
What's the cutoff for honor roll again?
3.5.
Good.
How many students made it over 3.5?
180.
Out of?
450.
Very good.
Oh, that's good.
Any other items on that open point?
Nope, just always looking for ways to be excellent.
Second one opened by Grace was to follow up with the teachers that haven't checked off anything on the 180-day plan assigned to Joy.
Oh, she's not here.
Not here yet. Maybe skip over until she is here.
She actually said she wasn't going to make it tonight.
Okay. Next item also opened by Kent. He's not here either on that one. Maybe if Joni has anything on that one, to incorporate the work release program, so students can get credit or anything to cover it.
I sent an email on that one. We still need to set up the program. Catherine Johnson is going to be heading that one up, and she's been on maternity leave, so it's kind of been on hold. Hasn't been the top priority right now, so it's not complete.
So Can't close that one. Scott, open the next item for Suzanne. Do you want a procedure for following the absence policy? We need to identify the person who will do it. The procedure to get it done, and it needs to be ready to go by first quarter.
So we have identified Bonnie as the person who will do it. She's in the process of doing it through that. We have the tardy policy here, an updated or amendment to it that we're requesting is approved by the board tonight. And we're working on the absence policy to follow up with that so that we can use the data coming out of Power School and, I guess, appropriately follow up and make sure that we're in adherence to the law with the absences.
And we will be getting to that tardy policy later.
Yes.
In the
but that is not, it can't be closed because we're still in the process of working on that, the policy and procedures to make sure that we've got everything in line.
Okay. Scott, did you have anything else to add on that?
That's good.
Okay, we'll hold that open then. Next one opened by Kent, number 5, for Suzanne also. We'll research if we can have a school level committee with a board member on it without having them. Could be the chair.
And I think that was supposed to be closed, so we'll close that.
For that last time. Because the answer is yes, you can.
Okay. She's in charge of closing our open items.
I am, so I'll get that closed.
And Ken will need to give you his approval to.
Yeah. Well, last meeting, then we approved it. I just forgot to close it.
Okay, number 6. To do that also is to get a bid on getting a new exit in the assembly hall.
And I talked with, and I think I sent an email out to all the board. The only thing that I got, and it's not sufficient, is what it would cost to have someone design and create that plan, not necessarily the cost of building it. So I'm kind of at an impasse because if I don't know how we want to build it, then I don't know exactly what to have them bid on.
Any input from the design?
Well, Kim sent the design, the original designs, because it was designed in the original, you know, phases. I think it was phase 2 or 3 that was actually in the original design, so I don't think we'd have to go through the process of redesigning unless we changed what that original design is. So I'm not sure where to reach out to get a bid for that. I actually, like I mentioned at the last board meeting, I was really serious about getting a slide as the exit. But, yeah. And that's what I'd asked for, but I guess I wasn't sure when I'd asked for that quote on it. So it can't be closed. I don't have an answer to that.
You'd probably have to go through the RFP process, though.
With something like that, absolutely. You'd have to go through the RFP because it would be more than the $10,000.
But if we're not
ready
to do it, and I'm not quite sure how to get that, maybe I'm actually going to procurement training on Friday.
So maybe
I
can
ask how we get information if we're not yet ready to actually do it. What process is there?
So when you reached out to get the cost of the design, who did we talk to you on that?
IPS. But I actually didn't intend to get a cost on the design because I had understood the design was already appropriate. I had actually asked what it would take, but that was probably the wrong place to reach out to get that kind of bid. And I'm not sure where I would unless we did an RFP process, and then I don't know if an RFP kind of commits ourselves to doing it, or if anybody would actually give some kind of bid without charging or minimal charge to give a bid on a project that size.
I don't know the answer to that.
I didn't either. So that's kind of why I was at an impasse. I'm not quite sure where to go from here.
You probably want to explore more with somebody who could tell us.
Yeah. So I'll see if I can find out.
Sorry. Wait till Kent's here and wait to close that, but
yeah.
Sounds like it's not
yeah,
ready.
I don't think so.
Is there a deadline that we're up against to have that done?
Technically, it should be done now, from my understanding, because we're using that south room for concert hall, and we have a couple of classrooms down on that end now. The couple of classrooms don't require the additional exit, but anytime we have, and it wasn't, from what Kim was saying, it's not necessarily just when we have those crowds down there. It really is if the capacity of our building is such that it requires that extra. And from what I understood, it does require that additional exit that we actually should be, we should have that in place.
I don't see it as something we can let slip too long then.
I think it needs to be addressed, but I kind of wonder if it would, as you know, we've moved our board meeting location. We needed to clear the room so that we could put kids in it for classes. Mm-hmm. We're fast running out of classrooms, so we're getting close to, and I know that we're not projected to increase our enrollment soon or right away, you know, this year, but, you know, with the additional college classes being held, all things considered, the number of teaching bodies we have, we're filling our building up, so we might have to look into phase two or three, whatever it is, Kim, with the exit upstairs and with the remodel, if we're going to do anything more or what, when.
You mentioned the slide. Is it a possibility to have an external, just like a fire escape, as an emergency escape?
I think so. That's my understanding. But like, that's why I was asked about the slide. And that was my question to them, is that something that would meet code? Mm-hmm. The slide is that exit.
An external fire escape would be the cheapest route. Possibly.
Did they have an opinion?
No, the only bid that I got was that what it would cost for them to design it.
And I saw that.
Yeah.
We saw that.
Yeah.
I don't think slide's going to work.
You don't think it will? I want it to.
Or
I believe that.
Or not a slide, but external stairs.
That's the original plan that when we looked at it and saw what you'd have to do, we figured you'd do two external, or maybe one internal, one external.
That's probably why they do it on all the apartments. It's their cheapest way of doing a fire escape, external metal stairs or something. Just
you could do an external. Metal stairs.
Something you'd never use, but just in case of emergency, it meets code and qualifies for an emergency exit.
So why wouldn't a slide work?
Because
kids would get on it.
Because it's unorthodox.
You have too much fun escaping.
Well, slide versus stairs isn't going to be a lot of difference cost wise. I mean, you could do an external frame stairs.
No, I wanted the slide
minimal.
For the kids. It wasn't
you really wanted it.
If it was just for fire escape and you didn't use it for anything else, and it was just on a little alarm door, then an external uncovered stairs would work. But if you're going to use it for access, it's not a good idea. But if you're only using it for emergency.
Well, so the question is, do you need another one right now? Because right now they're having assemblies and they've got the two big exits. I've never been there where they've needed another exit.
It's calculations. If you do a calculation by how many students are here based on what we used already, we put the right amount of people out of every single exit to make it work. And any more people, any more room, any more space, it's not gauged by the people. Well, you could argue that when you're in an assembly, there's nobody else here. And we talked about that. But if you have more people, any more use of space, then you need more exits.
And I'm saying that I think the exit right now is actually functioning pretty well. I think we just need to make sure up to code.
But function isn't the question. We're not up to code if we use that space. If we use any more space than what was approved, we're not code. And we are. And that's
so wouldn't just an exterior exit work?
Not a commonly used exterior exit. Not what? A not commonly used exterior exit, like an emergency escape.
I think that is an option that would be less expensive than to building an enclosed one. An enclosed one is what I envisioned, but what you're saying, yeah, I can see that.
So that's a good question. Does the exit need to be only for emergency use, or does it have to be a regularly used exit to get up to code?
No, it could be just for emergency use.
Any code.
Yeah, you just say emergency exit only, and you just don't use it. That's Fair. Most offices have any two-story office over 3,500 square feet has an exterior exit. And if it has the exterior exit, it's not usually used.
Yeah, but you're up to code.
Yeah.
Could I have an emergency exit that has a slide?
It might be an issue of how
very
fast
creative.
People can exit, because one person goes down and second person.
I'm actually being really serious. I mean, think of an airplane. You slide right off the airplane.
Alarm bells go off in my head for liability and risk.
Slide down a little too fast.
It's a tube slide. There you go.
The code.
And now it's enclosed too.
Well, that's what I'm envisioning is this spiraling tube slide.
Yeah. And then the students worry every day. I am unaware of any provision in the code that I have read or seen or heard of that allows that.
My slide.
Yeah. I thought it was creative. I mean, when Joshua showed me that idea and he was investigating it, I thought, wow, somebody's really thinking.
Okay. The kids would really like it.
And you need to teach creativity in this school for sure. That is awesome.
Anyways, we should consider an external, just a stairway. I bet you could do it for, it would be 5 to 10 times cheaper than an internal.
I think
probably
you're
probably 5,000, $3,000 to $10,000. Internal one's going to run you
$30,000 to $100,000.
It's going to be tremendously different.
Okay.
You could actually look at the fire escape. It wouldn't exceed the $10,000 requirement, so you could actually look at that on your own too. Or we could just plan it. Yeah. Or you could get a good engineer to give you a quick, or a building construction guy, in fact, as far as that goes.
Anything else on item 6?
Whoever was in there, I don't have it.
7, Joy's still not here, but the curriculum review packet. Hold that open since neither of them are here. Number 8, same situation. Core standards checklist. Is there anything on 7 or 8 that we need to talk about with either of them not here tonight? And then, if not, the last item on here is make amendments to our charter. I'm not sure how it is.
The amendments on the charter was looking at our number of students. And then,
increasing the size.
And then there was one other thing, do you remember?
You must have been absent.
We considered before increasing the number of school days.
You won't miss any more meetings.
But the deadline for doing that is tomorrow. There's no possible way that's going to happen to open the
2020
year.
So it's
if
a two-year.
It would be to apply it in the 2021.
But the application is almost 2 years here.
So right now we're at 450 people, no matter what, until 2021.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So do we still want to make amendments for the following year?
I think that was the hope.
Get on it soon.
But it's going to take quite a bit of effort, and it has to have the entire board on in line to do that, because it requires the entire board to have that input to approve anything and to go to the board to present, and they would be asked questions and need to know that the board knows what's going on, knows what we're requesting, has approved that, and can back up the decision.
Okay, and I don't recall exactly what brought this item up in this meeting, but this is a really broad open point.
Mm-hmm.
What did we mean? What specifically are we asking for?
Why am I amending our charter for the number of students?
The enrollment number. Right now it's capped at 450.
Enrollment can be amended with less, because what we were talking about, and that they had actually a training on it last director's meeting, but what we were talking about was if we were going to expand, and I can't remember what they call it, but so that there would be maybe increasing the grade levels that we actually teach. So moving toward a middle school and a high school kind of thing. So grades 5 through 8 in one school and 9 through 12 in another school. That's the one that takes kind of that monumental effort. The increased enrollment isn't quite as extravagant. But I still think, in the back of my mind, it seems like there needs to be an 18-month leeway or lead time on it.
So is the more specific action item meant for somebody to come up with a proposed amendment to our charter?
I would think so.
Who's the right one to do that?
Or wasn't it assigned to Scott?
No, he wasn't here. That's why I got it.
If you look at the minutes, it's not the same.
Okay. Should we update that action required then to come up with a proposed amendment to the charter for the 2022, 2021 year?
2021.
Didn't we have a deadline in October, the end of October?
October 31st, if we wanted to make that happen.
That or the enrollment?
Either one. The enrollment, I don't think it has quite as large of a lead time, and I know it doesn't take as much because you're just amending the numbers versus incorporating more grade levels.
Incorporating in the grades, wasn't there something where we had to do it, you said 18 months, so that would mean it would take us 2 years to incorporate that, right? If we wanted to, in 2 years, have those grades, we'd have to do that by tomorrow.
Yes.
Does this need to be broken into two actions? One for members?
Yes.
To get done by tomorrow, and the other one
It is two different issues. To me, I think you got to look at the enrollment change. So the deadline is going to be February of 2019 in order to change enrollment for 2020. If you need 18 months.
No, it would be the 2021 school year.
Do you need more than 18 months?
See, so that is 19, and then it would be the 2020.
Yeah,
so
February of 2019 is the deadline for your 2020 enrollment.
I believe there was that 18 months.
If it's 18 months.
Lead time.
And I think so that'll be 2 years. Have you guys done projections for students?
We've done some loose
projections.
It says
when you're going to be, and you, to me, I envision it as probably even a 450 to 500, 1 or 2 years to 550, steady growth. But they should have some growth numbers that are pretty accurate.
Yeah, and typically you look at having about 25 kids. If you're going to do any kind of increase in enrollment, you want to look at it in about 25 kids. It's kind of what we were talking about.
Okay.
Typical class size is about 25. In a grade level.
So should we amend that item to say by February of 19 we'll make a proposed amendment to the enrollment period in our charter? Is that what we're saying we want?
I think so, is that right?
Yeah, I think maybe even a precursor to that.
That the first one is find out what the deadline is.
For sure.
Find out what the deadline is, requirement, and then put a definite deadline on it.
For the requirement of both of them.
Yeah.
Because we do want to visit the option of bringing on those extra grades.
It was also fifth and sixth. The idea of being able to offer some online courses through our own teachers, because we do lose funding every time we use seats for those online courses.
Who can research that deadline for us?
I can research it, see what I can find out.
And then who is that open point for?
Is there something we're doing here?
The original one is, we're just
Scott
changing
likes
the one that's assigned to Scott right
to
now, but Suzanne's going to research the deadlines. So that's a new open point, researching the deadline, and then make a proposed amendment to the enrollment, to the charter, the enrollment numbers in the charter. Once we know the deadline, incorporate that.
Okay.
If Scott wants to bring a team on board to help.
Yeah, I will.
Okay, that covers the.
I read mine all the time.
Right back down.
Okay.
You could be on the team. So it looks like that covers all of the items that were. On the open items list. Is there any others that anyone has tonight to talk about? Okay, so we've completed item two on the agenda. Item three is our director's report. Turn the time to Suzanne for that.
Yeah, and then Kathleen, I think, will follow up with Grace and the finance committee. I, in all honesty, we've got it, our MRP turned in. I haven't looked at, and I'm not sure if we've got review points to review. If we do, oops, I haven't done it yet. I spent the last couple of weeks on scheduling. We do have a new schedule running right now. I think it's going really well. I've gotten some really positive feedback from teachers. We've just tried to level out the classes as best we can at this point in time. And then we're ramping up to schedule for second semester because a lot of classes are semester courses. So that's a big chunk of my time has been spent on that. We do have, if I just kind of go down through facilities, we've got in-house care and maintenance right now. We probably need to look to expand a little bit of the maintenance portion because there are a few things kind of falling apart in the building. So kind of want to look at that. Our enrollment is still at our maximum. The last I looked, and I haven't looked at the numbers today, but we were right around the 450 mark, just over that. So we still have full enrollment. And we are very short on the Human Resources Department. We're very short on substitutes and or paraprofessionals. We have need for substitute on a daily basis and sometimes two or three. And you know, to find qualified personnel to do that, we're really struggling with that point. And then as far as, I think that that's the main things that I would report out tonight. So I don't know that I have anything more unless you guys have questions and I'm not hitting something that you wondered about.
How were the numbers on the actual reports?
We were over the numbers and the average daily membership was also, I believe. Okay. So we've got a report that she can do. So we did have the auditors in here. They did take our role and everything looked really good.
Did they issue a report of any kind?
Yeah, I think Kathleen went to get that. They basically just come in and say, okay, here's the numbers, here's what it is, and then they just send a report out.
They were only auditing the enrollment?
The enrollment. And the way they use that is part of the funding is that we receive is based upon the number of students enrolled on a regular, you know, that are enrolled, and the other part is on average daily membership. So that October 1 determines a portion of the funding, and then the yearly attendance rate, average daily membership, will determine the other portion of the funding. And that's determining next year's funding. These numbers are determining next year's funding.
Is this two copies of the same thing?
Okay, it appears to be.
So they did come and conduct their reports or the audit, and then we're still wrapping up all the financial audit report items.
Okay, so they just described the procedures basically. It'll say whether we amend
it.
It does
say. Basically says everything that was expected was what was seen. So there wasn't any variance.
So we've been reporting we had this enrollment. They came in and verified that, yes, indeed, we had this, the kids in
their school. They do go into the classrooms. They run and classrooms are randomly selected, and they do go in and take attendance based on the
Good.
So it did match what they was expected.
Okay. Anything else on the director report?
It just kind of rolls into the finance.
Anybody else
want
to see that?
So for the, here's a reminder for the school land trust, we did make sure to submit the reports that were required. And the train just crashed.
What were the funds used for?
Okay, that's right. I was going to pull that up. We had that listed.
science curriculum.
I think that's right. The science curriculum was where that focus was. We placed all of that on last year, so that was the final report. It was, it was submitted as how they were spent, and that was for the other finance teams that I've been working on, the quarter one transparency, I'm just finishing that up to submit tonight. That's due here at the end of October, so I'm almost finished with that. I'll just finalize that and submit the transparency report to be in compliance with that. And then UCA plans are due tonight, I guess. The UCA plan is due November 1st, so we're just finalizing that. And there is we didn't have time to cover it in the governance committee, but it does ask the question. They have a changed form for the definition of at risk of academic failure. So it says, has your governing board chosen to define at risk of academic failure for this current year, yes or no? So according to the law, the rule, the definition of academic or risk at risk of academic failure means scores below proficient on a board or LEA approved assessment, or it meets whatever we define it as. So if we are okay with using their definition of scores below proficient on a board or LEA approved assessment, then that's the standard that will be used whenever we look at anything that's at risk of academic failure. If not, then we need to fill out the form and define what it means and have it approved, board approved. So, I don't know if there's
I might recommend that we would use their verbiage, because that's what we've been looking at, is board-approved assessments that would then, and defining where that threshold is for proficiency. I would think that
that's
would
what
meet
with
what we've been
data and things
talking about.
I felt like it was adequate to use the definition that they had available. I just wanted to make sure that that information was available, that we can define it. We do have to go through, and I would just have to go through the process and draft it and then review it and approve it. And, so otherwise I can just say, no, we're not defining it, and submit the form that way. I don't know if we need to vote that we define it, or if we just have, we've just chosen not to, because this is a new form.
Do you have to submit it every year? How often?
This is it's a yearly form.
I think where we are doing the proficiency right now, it makes sense to just let it be defined like that. And if we have any problem with it, change it next year.
Because then we're still following law to just do it the way it is. And if we do feel like it, then that. So if that's acceptable, then I will just fill that. Just mark that no, we're not defining it ourselves, we're using that definition. I'll upload that form, and that completes a requirement for the UCA.
And I just kind of keep the status quo of what we've been doing then.
So it is what we are doing, and that's.
So I don't know if that would need a board vote, if that's the case.
So we just continue to follow the laws.
Yeah.
So I don't know, it was moved to number 8 just because I added it to Stephanie's list just to review the plan. The UCA, when we did the original budget this year, because we've got some experience now and I better understand the program accounting, as we went through the finance committee and we did set the budget, it was program focused. So I'm just making sure that everything in UCA matches what was discussed and what was on the budget originally. And just putting in, I've taken the SAGE results and things that Marie's bringing out tonight, and just putting in the data because it tracks. Our goals have been to increase proficiency in our students. Let me read it. We will use summative assessments to evaluate each student's progress. We will participate in statewide assessments, which currently include state selected assessments and ACT. Students will also take assessments created by the school. So that was the goal that has been standing for the last couple of years, and just modify how we achieve that each year. So
that's just needs to make sure that it's all entered, and there's different funding streams that are tied through the UCA. UCA stands for the Utah Consolidated
Application.
And it's moving over to the Utah grants, but this year, because they're rolling out the new grant website, then you still do the planning in the UCA, and then the funding is distributed through Utah grants. So I'm kind of running on two programs as they switch, but I have to finalize all the data and make sure it's all in there by November 1st is the deadline. And so just wanted to review that with.
So is that the process for getting all state funding or just specialized areas?
It's
or
primarily federal funding.
It's
that's
actually some of both. It includes the accelerated students. This year, accelerated is not a large portion. It's just over $2,000, but we do use that for, in the past, we've used it for some of our student enrollment textbooks and things. We've used it for honors math books. It's not a lot of money, but we have assigned it to some of those. It includes Title I and Title II, which is federal, IDA, which is SPED federal, and then Enhancement for At-Risk is the only other state program, which is about $30,000 that we use both for counseling, and the way I've described it is to that it'll be focused on the GPS plans because that ties into the at-risk or just making sure that they have their graduation plans and that we're helping them get there. And then the other part is for some of the after-school tutoring for any of the English teachers and other subjects. Or the English with the science and math are through USTAR, so any teacher that helps with the tutoring and after school programs or language arts intervention will be paid through the APIS.
So this is an annual review that we're doing, right?
Yeah. So this
so it's
is
not the first time we've done it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So this is just kind of wanted to make sure I gave the review, and that's where we're hitting those deadlines to submit it to. It's just kind of been the same goal. And that's what they told us as we were setting it up, is you usually kind of pick an overarching goal that kind of stays the same, but then your needs might change. So there are different strategies of whether we use the money on devices or...
And who was the review submitted to?
There is someone assigned to it at the state, each of those programs. So that's almost done. And if you need any more information, I can put that together, but it does align with what we have budgeted originally. So
okay, we were on our director's report, but I think we jumped down to number 8.
I kind of ran into the finance, and so then
okay.
UCA finance.
So is there anything more on the director's report between Suzanne and Kathleen?
I don't have anything more.
And did we also cover all the items on the finance committee, or
mm-hmm.
is there something, Grace, that you wanted to add?
Mm-hmm.
And what was the school land trust issue there?
Just that we did submit that report to make sure, because that's a requirement that we hit that, so I just want to make sure that that was noted that that was.
Okay, so the report saying what we spend the funds on?
Mm-hmm. It's an annual report that's due by October 20th. So it just kind of is on the October board meeting schedule.
Okay. Was anyone going to help Kent with number 5 tonight on the governance report? Hold that over next time? Or was
let's hold that open.
Actually, on that governance report, then anytime you board members want to open up and look at these books, you can. I think we'll have them in the office and check through.
Mm-hmm.
It's a operating summarization of the activity of the school. So,
okay, so we'll write down to the checklists of
everything,
people's job descriptions and checklists.
It doesn't have the job descriptions, but it does have checklists.
Okay.
Probably do need a reference book for documents and job descriptions and all those things.
Good.
Separate.
Okay, we can focus on that next month when we have our board chair here. 6 is the academic assessment. That's an important number tonight.
Yeah. So we do have some more numbers on our SAGE that were that are not available in the spring. So this report is one that I handed out in the spring, and it shows growth point average. I'm pretty sure this is the only report I'm showing you with growth, but I wanted to explain growth point average is how many points on average for that class or for that subject the students grew from one year to another. The state does, so in the fall, then we have the actual figures from the state that show which kids actually got their expected growth and which didn't. So I wanted to re-give the one last year because the numbers on the growth were not as high, but it's two different things. And so I just wanted to explain that in case you remembered what we had before, and then when you look at this, it could feel like that's not what I remembered. So I wanted to give this again so that you can see that, yeah, but that is a different calculation, and it was our own calculations. This growth percentage is from the state, if that makes sense.
And they use data from last or the previous year's SAGE to that year's SAGE as they're determining how they measure growth?
Yes, and the new report that I just handed out is percent of students that reached that expected growth from the state, that the state expects as acceptable growth.
So it doesn't track by student, it tracks by
and it does.
Classroom or?
It does track by student, and you can see it by teacher. So that's what that report is there, as it shows by teacher, the percent of students.
One with the color on it or the other one?
So the color one is the old one. The complete black and white one is the one that shows, that far column shows the actual percent of students per teacher that reached their expected growth.
I see. And, okay, good.
And then the other one just shows the growth points per grade level.
Per grade level.
Yeah, so the colored one kind of tracks the kids from year to year, and the growth that's added on the end there is points, not percent.
I think they didn't have science data. Is that because that's not one of the tracks?
So science data, the only way is that they don't have it for physics because you don't have
class,
it from physics
yeah.
to physics. You yeah, have it from chemistry to physics, and it's not,
right,
so they don't
right.
do growth on that.
That's true.
6th through 8th was a brand new assessment, and so they didn't have that because it's, again, it's going from different standards. Yeah, from core standards to seed standards. Also, in the spring when I had, we now also have on the new sheet, or no, yes, on the new sheet, and this new sheet isn't completely new. I did update the overall teacher percent proficient, and that is from the state. And most of them were, they were all within 1 to 3 percentage points. Some of them stayed exactly the same. If they changed, they typically went up. So what happens is the state will evaluate the tests after everyone has finished, and they'll find questions that they end up deciding that they need to throw out. So if we had kids that weren't there, but once they throw questions out, they don't count against those kids anymore. So we typically will see an increase, but not very much. And you can have a kid, as they evaluate things, that they originally were proficient, but not in the end, but that doesn't happen very often. So that is an actual percent proficient from, that's where we are now. That's the state's numbers there. And in the past, in the spring then, we didn't have our 7th and 8th grade numbers. So Victor taught 8th grade science and physics. So that 42 is a combination of those. John Green, the bottom of the just black and white. And then we didn't have numbers for John Green and Mary Sanders either, and those are included now as well.
Okay. So your overall teacher percentage proficient, is that
the kids that were proficient for that year?
That's percent of kids that they taught that were proficient for that year.
That year. And this year is it, this was
2017, 2018,
right?
Yep, so spring of 2018.
And then, so you have overall teacher proficiency, and then you have growth. The growth is from the 2016-17 year?
Mm-hmm. Yep, and it's interesting the way the state figures the growth is because it's in comparison to your peers that you scored with last year. So if you got a 1 and it was like a 385, then you're in the group of kids in the state that got a 1 and a 385. Then next year, they will compare how you did compared to your peers that you were with last year. And that's how they figure growth. That's why we really have no way of getting actual growth until they figure it in the fall. The other thing I have new is we had started researching some of the top schools. And so as we looked those up on the state site, we also wanted to see where our school fell.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some celebrations in there that we were kind of excited about. Our 8th grade math was 3rd in the state. I only put on this sheet the top 5, but our 9th grade math was 11th in the state, and our 10th grade math was 18th. And I actually do have that.
Say that one more time.
If you look off to the right there, then you can see where we were in each subject and each grade level. Yeah, so these are the top 5 schools. 8th grade is us. And then over here you can see our 7th grade was 83rd. Oh, and I said 9th and 10th backwards, sorry.
And this is...
Secondary Math 1.
Secondary Math 1, which is 9th grade?
9th grade typically, but you...
9th and 10th?
Yeah.
This is all math.
Mm-hmm. And then the next page is English, and the last page is science.
So we did very well, actually.
I think so. Our math did very well. Very exciting.
Turn to page 2 and see where we need to improve it.
And we are working on things there.
It's, let's see. So this 40, so looking at 7th grade, the Vanguard 48%, that means the percent of students proficient.
Mm-hmm.
That's Jordan Stephanie. Yes, Stephanie was at 82, Nora was 22. That was kind of an average. And then, Stephanie, you do what age? Just 7th?
Eighth grade. And then a little bit of 7th. So
but last year you was 7th?
She was all 8th in one group. So she does a 7th honors group, and the rest of hers is all the 8th graders.
Do you see much bias between the classes that are honors as far as percent of students who are proficient?
On proficiency, absolutely. On growth, no.
But not growth?
Yeah. And the reason you don't on growth is because if you're a struggling student, you're in a group with kids that score the same as
right.
you, and you're not expected to compete with. But proficiency, it is different.
But growth is year to year.
That's proficiency. I've got to do better on my labeling. Sorry, guys.
So the growth actually looked pretty good in all the math.
Mm-hmm. And our math department, in their PLC meetings last year, they did focus heavily on growth, and it shows they did track those kids and compare benchmarks. Yeah.
Can I just go through the titles? So, honors is the number of honors kids in that class that were proficient.
So
honors percent
proficient. So on that top line, 86% of his honors kids were proficient.
Okay.
He had 82 honor kids.
I thought they had honors classes and non-honors classes. So would an honors class have 100% honors kids? And then
right.
Out of the 100 kids, 86%.
86% of them were proficient.
Okay. Number of honors students. That's just a.
And he, that's how many number. Honor. Yep, that's how many students he had in honors.
Regular of percent his, proficient.
Yep. So of his regular students that were not in honors, 17% of them were proficient.
Does he mean he teaches a non-honors class?
Mm-hmm.
And only 17% were proficient.
Yep. And he had 18 total students that were not in honors. And of those 18, 17% were proficient. But if you look at that, 82 of them were in honors. So anyway, yeah.
He taught one non-honors class?
Mm-hmm. And then you look at his teacher percent overall. Sorry, I missed that.
Why do we have honor students that are not proficient?
That's actually my question too. I agree. I think that's low for an honors, in all honesty. Yeah.
Who has the honors classes?
This year or...
And
that's
all last year's
yep,
stuff.
Yep, this is all last year.
So Gustavson was honors class?
He had some.
Okay.
Hale Green had some.
Hale Green had 40.
Yes, Evans had some.
And Evans had 60 and 62 non. He was about
mm-hmm.
even on both, Stephanie.
Yeah.
And 97% of our honors were proficient.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
That's good. That's really good. But I don't mean to knock.
You're good.
The top two teachers, but they only had 20% efficient when they came to non-honor students, huh?
Yeah.
For 86 and 89. Looks mm-hmm. like they're doing
the
awesome, but
students.
Then when they have regular students, there's a huge disparity, huh? And and that's probably a more of an indicator of the students. But,
I was concerned on that second one, too, with only 70% reaching the growth. Yeah, worried about that too. And I think that's something that needs to be addressed.
So, can you talk about overall teacher proficiency again? What does the 72 on the top line represent?
So that is his percent of students that he taught overall, whether they were honors or regular. Yep, total percent of students that were proficient. So the column next to it, report card percent average, we kind of wanted to see the difference between how are they grading and scoring in class compared to how are they performing on an end of year.
They get an A's in class and they're failing the end of the year.
Exactly. So we kind of wanted to see if there's a correlation there across the subjects as well.
Is that what that means, though?
And that's the report card percent average for that teacher, yeah.
That explains why.
So that's their grades.
Testing into math and 50 and getting A's.
Okay. So
well, I think
helps.
A big chunk of that
yeah.
was the Accuplacer, and the SLIC is, by the way, they're getting rid of Accuplacer.
Yeah.
It's,
that's what they said.
You know, Accuplacer was, from what I could tell, it wasn't necessarily assessing the same thing that was expected to be taught in the same way. So it was, and SLIC saw that. They've been looking at what should we do and how should we determine criteria for qualification. And
yeah, the math department, my Swartz math department head, and she actually said that they are allowing exceptions for regular college students, but they won't allow any exceptions for the concurrent on the Accuplacer because they realize that the Accuplacer is not an accurate
yeah.
placement test for that.
Yeah. It'll stand for the spring classes. That's still the measurement,
mm-hmm.
but after that, it won't be Accuplacer, not even for concurrent enrollment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I also have, it's like quite lengthy, so I didn't do as many topics. I think there's enough for, this is the report that the state sends from ACT, so.
This is our, this is the ACT.
For the last spring.
This is to me a little bit better. Judge how your students are doing? Is that,
not really.
Or not? You think the SAGE?
Because we had so many factors that came in.
I would agree.
The students thinking that they didn't have to take it because they took it the year before, so they didn't study for it. I can't remember that we had.
There wasn't there a lot of preparation, and it's a different type of test that the students aren't used to taking.
So your kids that normally got a higher score scored lower consistently across the board on that ActiQuizzer when they did better in 10th grade than they did in 11th grade.
This is your, this is the Vanguard.
So it's not, report. I don't know how you can judge the results on this one.
Yeah, I don't
know. So this report is actually talking about the last year's graduating class. That's not the 10th graders that took it. That'll be next year's report. So we should hopefully see an increase in those percentages next report we get, because this is based upon this year's graduating seniors, or last year's, I should say, the seniors that graduated in the spring.
So that class that we had that anomaly on,
this is our juniors. This is how our juniors scored on ACT in February.
Is this not the same report I just received?
You saw it's testing 2017-2018.
Grade 11.
This okay, is last so that's year's. A different report.
This is February's ACTs for our juniors.
Okay.
Which is this year's seniors.
Right.
Right. So the other report that I saw was for graduating class.
Yeah.
This is Vanguard Academy juniors. Grade 11, gotcha. You're going to give us a one-page summary? That's why I'm afraid this 20 pages. How do they do?
Is there a
little bit of a better summary? Or do
we're I, very hopeful that this year will be a lot better. We've set our teachers up a lot better this year for prepping the kids. Our science, English, and math teachers are taking 100% of the role of prepping the kids for the ACT. And they are, I've already seen it in a couple of subjects. I need to check on the third one and make sure that they are as well already doing those diagnostic tests and the practice tests and getting them ready for those. But, our students did quite poorly last year on the ACT.
Really?
Across the board, yep.
Seven? And tell me where you're even finding
seven.
Page numbers. Oh, there we go. Five. There we go. Upper right corner. 5-year trends. Let's see.
Page 14 has some more detail as well.
Let's see. Number of students tested. 53.
9 middle. I guess it's up from last year.
And we've actually seen these numbers, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen these in the past. We only had 9%
This is Jolene's grade.
Watch Jolene's.
She actually did really well on the first one, and I don't know how she did on the second one.
Is this the second one?
You have the by student numbers, right?
I just don't remember. I don't know if I looked.
I need to get those from you, too.
She didn't study for the second one because it was one that she was going to do, and she was studying for finals.
There were a few of the kids that just didn't, quite a few. So, I think it's...
You need to do better on that test.
Mm-hmm.
A lot better.
Yeah.
Only juniors take it.
Right.
Some 10th graders can take it if they want.
Not with us. They can pay and take it off site.
Then it doesn't calculate.
It doesn't calculate in our numbers because that's not the state requirement.
It's required in 11th grade for all students. You can't opt out of this one, or can you?
You can opt out. Just any state required assessment, you can opt out.
But it does go against the school if they opt out.
If we have a...
It goes against the scores, or goes against the, how's it go against the state?
No, it goes against the school. If we have,
Ten people, what happens?
If, I think it's, is it 5%? Do you remember?
Yeah.
If it's over 5%?
It's 95% have to take it.
Yeah, I think it's, if we have, if we're missing...
Less than 95%, then what?
Then it goes against our school grade.
Just your overall school grade.
Yep.
If it's less than one.
I think if we have, is it 5% opted out? I think it is 5. I'm pretty sure it's 5% opt out.
That's what it was last year.
Yeah.
So our weak areas were reading, science, and English.
Yeah, and our curriculum coordinator has been working really closely with our English department on incorporating some changes in the reading, especially informational text.
This data reflects what we're seeing on the SAGE, too.
Yes, it does.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I saw some of the plan.
Are these SAGE data numbers that you've given us somehow factored into teacher performance indicators or evaluations of some kind, or is it,
There are a lot, aren't they? A lot now.
And if so, how?
Base rate and all this availability. The amount of bonuses that's available to.
The SAGE data go factors into those?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
Any other questions? We'll move on to Joni.
Okay.
A couple of things to start with was looking at a little bit of the concurrent enrollment, and like Suzanne mentioned, that they're no longer going to require the ACCUPLACER. And so one of the things that we need to do as Vanguard is determine what requirement we have for our students. At what point do we allow a student to add or drop, or to be able to take that class, the math or English classes, without the ACCUPLACER requirement. So that's something we need to determine before that happens.
They have a survey that they send out that we could try out and see that, in essence, it's the kid determines the pathway they're on. So if they're not on a STEM pathway, then they look at 1030 or 1040, and they determine, there's a little survey they can take to determine which would be most appropriate for which area of study they're going into, or occupation, or whatever. If they're on a STEM pathway, then it is in the 1010, 1050, 1060 arena, and that is basically, they have to still complete secondary math 1, 2, and 3, and it's not to skip one of them. They have to complete all three to be able to qualify, and they need to do a survey of sorts that says, okay, are you well prepared to take this kind of thing? So it kind of puts the responsibility back on the students and the school shoulders to say, are they prepared to enter this course?
Okay.
The other thing is the registration for concurrent enrollment at Salt Lake Community College is open, and we are going to have probably about half or a good chunk of our students needing the English 2010. We'll have to take that on campus because those that are taking it through Snow College, they only want to offer it for those that are graduating from Snow. So anyone graduating from Salt Lake Community College would need to take it at Salt Lake Community College campus. And then we also have a handful taking the business 1050. So that's open now. Kind of the problem with that is that our second semester scheduling hasn't begun yet. We kind of have an idea of what they're taking, but not when it's going to be. We're about 3 weeks behind because we did do the quarter 2 rescheduling. So we're ready to begin that now, with the goal to get that done as soon as we can so students can know which classes to sign up for. And we may even just choose one and then, anyway, kind of determine what we want
to
do at that.
It seems like we need to do that. We need to do professor evaluations and
yeah,
get our kids into the
classes.
Yeah, and
I did do that already today. So we're kind of looking
like
that.
It seems like that needs to take precedence over putting the schedule in place because
yeah.
I think we just put the, yeah.
Yeah, so that's anyway, that's something that we're working on. Snow registration is the third week of November. And then the ones that are taken at Vanguard are just kind of open to, you know, when we do that. The scheduling, we just finished up quarter two scheduling and we're ready to begin second semester. And then our goal is by January, we're working on next year's schedule. One of the things that was requested in one of our other board meetings was that we start looking at GPS plans and report to the board of what percentage of students have that complete. We have 70% of our students have done a GPS plan. We'll have done a new one this year, so there's still some that did an old one, but it's not updated. The problem with those plans is they have not been reviewed yet, and so a student may have put one together, but I don't know that it's accurate at this point. We have the youth science and
so
most of this...
reviewed by you?
Yeah, by me and anyway, kind of a team, our college and career team. And then once they have that completed, we're in our leadership classes where they just finished up the youth science. Then this next week, we're gonna be working on the GPS plans, making sure that everybody has one of those and they understand it and they get it reviewed by parents and signed. And then preparing their packets to do their meetings with me. So we're behind on those. We should be, have started those in September and we haven't done any of those yet. And then the at-risk, you know, I guess Kathleen talked about that just a little bit. We looked at the student success coaching and what we need to do there to make sure that our students are not failing, looking at our credit recovery. We've been doing our credit recovery through BYU Independent Study, and now we're looking at Schmoop. It's a cheaper option, but it's just something new that we're learning about. And so again, we have probably just for our seniors, I think we've got like 20 or 30 seniors that have a failed grade that we have to do credit recovery for.
Are you looking at doing credit replacement or?
Oh, we have with some of them, yes. So some of them we have already done that and we've been working on that with as many kids as we have.
Because the legislature has approved credit replacement now to where they can actually retake the course and get a new grade and it replaces the grade so it doesn't count against their GPA. Yes. So they just replace it so the highest grade they get is the one that goes on their transcript.
And that's at the community colleges?
No, this is at the high school.
It doesn't count for the college classes, but at the high school level, they can replace those grades. So if they got a C and they're not satisfied with that, they can retake the course and replace the grade.
That's okay, but it seems like they wouldn't want to be replacing too many classes.
Well, they're replacing a quarter, you know, it just all depends. And a lot of the kids have plenty of space in their schedule.
Do they?
And if they've got to do the recovery process anyway, it kind of makes more sense if it's possible to replace the grade so it removes that F from their GPA.
For sure.
And they could just replace it with a higher grade.
For sure. That's good. That's good. I would hate to see too many high school students they've taken too many classes.
Our goal is to, if we do the student success program like we want to, our goal is to actually catch them before they fail the classes.
It seems like if you have to repeat more than,
I
would even say like one or two classes in high school, it seems like you're...
Oh yeah, we certainly don't want them to have to do that. We want them to pass it in the first place.
Right, right. Well, I mean,
does the repeat show up on the record?
The other one the lower one just goes away.
So does it? Do you know if it is eliminated from like the ninth grade?
Yep.
And then, so then it shows that you're from Woodrow, it's 9 and 12th grade.
Yep. And you just replace the grade.
And anything you replace. So if it's if they need 4 math credits, and they fail a 9th grade math, and then they retake it again in 10th grade, would that give them still 2 math credits, or would they still only get 3?
If they pass it the first time.
So if they get a...
But if they replace it, it won't count for two.
Yeah.
The replacement won't. So you really can't replace any of the required classes unless you have open spots in your schedule.
Well, yeah, you can, because I think... We're checking into it, but I think the SHMOOC can replace a grade. Because I think it's determined by the LEA.
So right now...
What determines whether that's replaceable, you know, and it could be competency, which the SHMOOC kind of works on the competency basis. So if they've mastered content and they can prove that through that SHMOOC process, then we can then just go in and override their grade and replace it.
So tell me how that would work when it comes to, so math, I think you required 4 years.
Yeah.
Vanguard requires four years.
So tell me math, you got 9, 10, 11, 12. Tell me if you fail one of these maths, how that would look on replacement. Let's say you fail 10th grade math. Let's not even say fail. Let's say you get a D and you want to replace it.
Uh-huh.
You would still have to take 11th grade math and 10th grade over? Math,
well,
you take two math classes?
You can do it by a quarter basis. So if I failed only a quarter,
okay,
then I can take a quarter's
just
worth
a one
of
quarter's grade. Worth of that and replace it.
And that would be your elective class.
Just replace that quarter grade.
And let's say you did the whole, let's say you got a, but if you got a C the whole year and you want to replace the whole year's worth, you'd have to have it as a separate, as elective, replace, and then you'd still have to take your other math.
Yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't replace an upper level.
Any kind of credit.
No.
Yeah.
So these are the students you identified for credit recovery right here?
Yeah, do you have that in there?
I do have it.
That was my original list. That wasn't every student. In fact, I need to look and see which one it was. Yeah, that one as of that point.
So that was September.
that was September, you said?
So is that on your? That's on your checklist, I assume.
Yeah. So my next month should be updated.
Excellent.
And we've done anyone that has an F.
Okay.
Then we've added them to the list. And I've,
do you only do Fs, or do you want to look at Ds, or?
Possibly we could
plus.
Do that. We're focusing on graduating first. but it is for sure, as we focus a little more on that student success and spend able to focus our time on that,
okay,
then we can start addressing those other issues as well.
There's quite a few of those.
Yeah.
In September.
And is that wasn't, we actually haven't in the past, we haven't looked at our students real close. It's just seniors come, it's like, okay, what do we need to do to graduate you guys? Let's try and get some credit recovery in. And
so this is just seniors you're probably looking at?
I think it has a grade on there. Most of them are seniors, and I'm not sure which one you have.
Mm-hmm.
If it does have some of the others, we have updated it, but I don't know for sure if that's the updated one. Show the grades.
10, 11, or 12 and 10, 10, 11, 12. Okay.
And
possibly graduates coming back. Is that what
it says? There were just a couple of them that were early graduates, or they had gone through our graduation ceremony and then we got their credits.
It's not really recovery.
Yeah, it's not really
recovery.
Everybody just missing some original credits, so we had to go back and help with some of them.
This list will be in there next month too, right?
Yeah.
Good.
And then the other one I have, for some reason, it's not letting me. Okay, there we go. So for our concurrent enrollment students, I've got a report from Heidi. I don't know why it's not letting me open it, but I did look at it at one point. Anyway, it's not, for some reason, it's... It says still loading, so my internet must be weak or else something's wrong with the site. I don't know, on Google Sheets. But I did look at it. There was quite a few students that are at risk of failing their concurrent enrollment classes, and that last day to drop. I don't know the exact date, but it's today
for snow.
For snow, I guess it's today. Salt Lake Community College is pretty quick too, and so we have contacted parents and. We're now, anyone that is deciding not to drop, we have a contract for them to fill out, and then they'll be meeting with me to go over goals and kind of what they're going to do to make sure that they're able to be successful in the class. so I'm not able to pull it up. But anyway, there was quite a few. I think we had a handful of Fs, quite a few Cs.
And Heidi sent I was here the night that she was finalizing the list. She did send the message out to all parents with someone with a C+ and below, mm-hmm. make sure that parent knew where they were, so that they would have that option, that if they didn't feel like they could get it up, that they would have that conversation with their student. That was the intent.
Is that going to come up in this packet next?
We can tell her that we want it in there. She already has it. She just needs to insert it in her packet.
They're fluid numbers, though.
I know.
Even the ones with the C's on there, several of them are up to B's and A minuses at this point, because it's maybe a homework wasn't graded or turned this in or finished their midterm or whatever. So they are fairly fluid numbers. The ones that are really low are extremely concerning.
She was having conversations with those kids specifically.
One of them, I know, has dropped it.
I've met with two of them that have dropped so far. So.
But that's putting a W on their transcript.
And that was actually
depends on
one
how
of the
you look at it, I guess.
Debatable.
Some people say the W's better, some people say the F's better. It's hard to say.
The thing with the F, whether if you take an F, you can replace it. You can't replace your GPA points. I think that you can take the class again. And I don't remember if it's the GPA points or the grade that's changed that is replaced.
You can replace an F, but you can't replace a W?
Yeah.
College, it's the other way around.
That's what I was going to say.
Well, that is a college. Or it doesn't affect your GPA. But if you retake the class.
You can't retake it as a concurrent enrollment student, I don't think.
No, you can't take it as a concurrent enrollment student.
But I think you can take it as a college student.
Yeah.
You can retake a W.
And I think it shows both. I think it'll still show both grades.
Yeah.
I thought
it'll adjust your GPA points, I think.
I thought a class taken after a W is only that grade. I thought the W didn't
affect
it.
Or it is.
That's right.
It doesn't.
To me, I think that it's still better off that way than redoing it, because, there was just some, at Salt Lake Community College, went to a meeting, and one of them says they felt like that getting an F was better than getting a W, but I didn't necessarily agree.
So what I understand is it is an F and an A. If you retake a class and get an A, it averages out as a 2.0, right? I guess it might even depend on the class. It might depend on the, because some schools actually have different colleges.
I think Salt Lake Community College allowed it to replace the GPA points.
I don't see how an F could ever be better than a W.
I don't either.
Yeah. I don't either. But
that's what she felt like at Salt Lake Community College, but I don't agree.
I can't think of any.
Because they're both on the transcript, so colleges will see both either way. So
I can't ever think of an F ever being
better than anything. F's never better than anything.
Okay.
You mentioned earlier that registration was open now, but we weren't ready to
enroll. Yeah, for anyone taking classes at the Salt Lake Community College campus, that is open now.
Okay, so those who have registered for second semester classes there, is that going to affect those students who have registered? Will they be able to get the classes that they're registered for then?
They need to sign up for them now, and I don't know if that information has been given to the students yet.
So that needs to be.
But you need to get CRM prepared and get them out to students.
Yeah, I was looking at that today too. Because
that's a CRM?
CRM is the number that you use to register for the class.
Okay. And if you don't do that, there's a risk of them not getting the class they registered at Vanguard for.
Yeah, but even with the class that they registered at Vanguard for, there's a class that's in their schedule that says you need this class, but our second semester schedule is going to be rearranged.
Okay.
And so the time frame has not been determined, so we're just going to pick a class and say this is the class that you should sign up for, and then put it in our schedule that way as we redo second semester schedules. The scheduling, I feel like it was a good thing, I guess, to adjust our schedule with the Bell schedule and everything, but it has taken quite a bit of time to do that, and so we're a little bit behind on all of our other scheduling and registration and stuff.
Let's get it out to them tomorrow.
I recommend that.
do the research on those for pastors, get the CRNs and get it out to them. Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything else on six? The tardy policy. Suzanne presenting that to us.
Oh, yeah, I think there are copies up there.
Yeah,
is that
right? Yeah, there's copies there.
Okay, who needs it?
Board members.
I think everybody's got them.
So you should have received in an email a copy of the existing and then the crossed out part and then the amended recommendation.
I think I have a copy right here of the current and original.
Do you?
Yeah, do you want it?
Yes. Okay. Thank you. So on the original, then we just made adjustments on the number of tardies per class per term. And changed it to be per term, because when we're looking at per class per term, it ends up being very, very time intensive to try to even extrapolate the data and process it and follow through with it and all that kind of stuff. So that's the primary change, is that it just went to tardies in the first period class and then tardies in general. And we are processing through that right now with the tardy detention, or the lunch detention when they're tardy at all. The first one is a warning, and that's within a quarter. And then the second one then is detention and so on and so forth. So that's the primary difference between the two.
It went from tardies per class per tardies per quarter.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's, like I say, it's not a significant change. Aside from the fact that, I mean, you know, the reason we did per class per term before is because sometimes you got a kid that is notoriously late after lunch.
Right.
And so it helps us identify where that's occurring. But like I said, the time that it takes to pull the data out of the system and figure out which period, and it just takes a little bit more time and man hours. And I don't think that there's the return on investment for that. So.
What will the policy be active as of?
We're acting on it now.
Okay. So the students
pending
already
pending board
know.
Approval.
The students
yeah.
already know what the policy is.
Yeah.
Okay.
So doesn't this change make it a much more strict policy when you have the same penalty for 0 to 2 tardies
it
under
is.
The old policy, and
it
now
is.
It's 0 to 2 for every class?
It is.
Except for the first period.
Right.
The first period stayed in place.
That's where the penalty goes on the mom and dad, huh?
Yeah.
So what's prompting the change now as opposed to?
Because the open point said we needed to streamline and have procedures for doing for our attendance procedures and making sure we get our kids into classes on time and accountability for our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so through that process, as we're getting the data from PowerSchool and we're looking at what, you know, is it okay to be tardy 10 times this term,
mm-hmm.
you know? Every class they miss or every class they're late for impacts their education. So a process of the procedures we're following and helping the kids just get out of the class on time.
Did we announce anything any change yet to the students this year?
Uh-huh. Yeah, we've let them know that the results, and I believe that the original one worked its way toward yeah, it's the same procedure, but that losing extra passing period, that was another thing. It's like, how are we going to escort a kid to, you know, if we got kids with multiple tardies,
mm-hmm.
how am I going to, I don't have the manpower to escort them to classes.
Right.
Okay.
So those kinds of things were removed because it was not feasible.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't
right.
possible for us to follow procedure if we did that.
That was good. And is this unexcused tardies? Say a parent pulls a kid out for a doctor's appointment or something and brings them back.
It's for, yeah, if the parent brings them back, they're
yeah,
just signing them in, and
okay.
and that's not considered. It's usually an absence because they're gone for more than.
Right, but if they come back, if like shortly after another class starts or something.
Yeah, then they're just entering
okay.
for the day. And the way the tardies are marked and our proposal really is on absences too, because we're working on that one as we speak to try to streamline that process. But the attendance office marks those rather than the teachers.
Okay.
Would you just say what a lunch detention is and an after-school detention is? Is that where they have lunch in an administrative
yeah.
office? Or
we
what
have
that?
A classroom set up and we have a supervisor in there. And anybody that's been assigned a lunch detention, whether it's for tardies or another reason, then they check in there directly at the beginning of their lunch period. And then we actually have lunches delivered to them.
Okay. And after school detention
so,
on
yeah.
Fridays?
After school detention is primarily for Fridays. And that is to, you know, we have to keep them after then that we'll do. And that's just when the tardies become so excessive and the lunch detention hasn't been effective, then it would escalate, you know, because they're still tardy.
Yeah.
Escalates into that time after school.
And so they just, regular school gets out at 2:15 and they just sit in the class from 2:15 to 4:15?
Yeah, but with our new bell schedule, that actually should be changed to 2:00. But I think we did 2:15 before because school got out at 2:05 and that gave them 10
yeah,
minutes to gather their things and get there. But
okay.
now it would be 2:00. 2:00 to 4:00.
Okay.
So you've been monitoring the tardy reports over the past months or years. Has it been pretty level or is it getting worse or better or is it?
Well, the main things when we were monitoring before we were, because we had complaints about the passing time, and et cetera, because we started with 3 minutes and they complained they couldn't get to classes on time. So we increased it to 4 and the tardies increased. One, when they had more passing time, then they were later, more often late to class. And so then at the beginning of last year, then we had a 5 minute passing time. And our tardies just were off the charts.
Really?
Yeah. Because the more time they had, they would kind of get into their conversations or hanging out at the lockers. And, you know, that what I saw outside my office was, you know, they were stopping for their snack breaks at the lockers and talking and whatever else, going outside to throw a couple of hoops or whatever. They just had time to do it, so they did it.
And that was all while this policy was enforced with the
yeah.
detentions and everything?
Yeah, that was before.
Really?
I know.
So.
Didn't make sense, but. So this year, you know, at the beginning, we had quite a number of kids in detention, but that number has decreased significantly since we've started inputting this. So we still have a few, but not nearly as many as we've had.
What feedback are we getting when we made that change to 3 minutes, parents?
We now allow backpacks in class because they were saying their kids couldn't get there. They couldn't use the bathroom
mm-hmm.
in between classes. And so, you know, every teacher has already been told let the kids use the bathroom. And obviously if the kids are abusing each other, you know, then they would have to say, you know, or if it's during direct instruction, you know, if you can wait, kind of thing. And then after the direct instruction happens, they can go out and use the bathroom. So the two biggest things were, you know, I didn't have time to stop at my locker. Didn't have time to use the bathroom.
Right.
So they can take their backpacks to their classrooms and they can use the hall pass and go use the bathroom if they need to.
Anytime. During cleaning in the class, they can just use the bathroom?
Yeah.
Okay. Some parents I talked to out there weren't aware of that.
I think it depends on the teacher. There are a couple of teachers that were still kind of stringent on that.
Not letting them use it?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
okay.
And most of the time it was either this is not the right time. Some teachers did have their life happens passes, and so then they had to use the life happens passes to go use the bathroom.
When somebody finds out I'm on the school board as a parent, maybe this should be a public comment.
That's
one of
the
things. That's the first thing they bring up. How come there's 3 minutes between you? So they weren't aware that, you know,
yeah.
use the bathroom during class. But yeah.
I thought we'd get that information. I'm sure I put that in the email at one point in time.
I still go back and forth myself on the 3 to 4 or 5 minutes. Because
bringing it up again, but I know you have.
It could be. I haven't heard any complaints recently, so I don't know. Maybe there are, but.
I've had a couple of parents talk to me about it, but
recently.
It's been about a month.
I have recently.
But, interesting.
Some kids are telling their parents that they aren't drinking water during the day because if they do, they'll have to use the bathroom and they don't have time to do that.
Things you hear. Interesting. Yeah.
I know.
It probably wouldn't hurt to reiterate to teachers and or to staff and the parents, you know.
As long as they know that's available, that shouldn't be a problem.
It should be.
Seems like the good kids, you want to give them 5, and the rough kids, you want to give them 3. when you hear that it goes up worse with 5, I mean, that's
just
not. Well,
we actually started following kids with this condition, and I picked my own kid because I was in my office and he came out of the college class there. So I jumped out of my seat and walked with him to see how we did. And he had to go from here to the classroom that's down on the end upstairs. And of course he didn't stop at his locker, but walked with him and he got there within a minute. And I thought, I got 2 minutes. So I followed another kid and they got to their class, but right at the bell. But they were at their locker when I dropped my kid off, and they were just kind of talking to their friends and hanging out and doing their little thing and grabbing this, close their locker. Oh, he needed something else. He unlocked it, got the other stuff, put it down, and then he walked without any kind of hurried pace, and he was at the door when the bell rang. That all happened in the passing time. And I know that Kathleen followed a few kids too, and Marie followed a few kids.
It's really not that big. The ones that I followed.
I was at Herman High for the DECA competition. It was probably 4 or 5 times bigger than ours. They have almost 3,000 kids, and they have 5-minute passing time. I think that's proportionally equivalent to what we're looking at. I don't.
3 minutes. Is most of them have 5 in the big schools, and there's one that even has 6 that I was looking at. 6 minutes.
My kids were counting. There were like 8 or 10 different stairways that you go.
We can add more minutes to passing time, and it would have to come off of class time because the schedule is aligned with the college schedule such that even if you take a minute, you're going to slide off to one side or the other. So it would have to come out of class time if we put it in passing time.
I was just curious to know from the comments that I've heard.
Yeah.
It comes on both sides. But as long as, you know, that flexibility is there during class to meet the.
It's supposed to be
the students,
yeah.
Then you're okay.
That's always the thing that comes up is what if they have to use the bathroom?
Yeah.
And you always welcome parents in the building to come see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To me, that's almost what I have to do. I need to do it. I need to sit down and just actually go through a few days of school with the kids and see the schedule, or live the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Waiting for a motion, David.
Okay. I just noticed one typo.
Change the
on
time,
here.
Huh?
Just student tardiness on the third paragraph down. Student tardiness accumulates with the plural S there. I had to add. And would it make sense the rest of that sentence to say on a per term basis rather than school wide? Is what we're really trying to say.
Yes.
In fact, these are my recommendations.
On a per term basis for all classes combined is added, and then just below that, instead of after first period tardies, it would be subsequent period tardies. And I like the wording better than after first period. We actually wondered how do we say that? So
one,
I like that.
The one number one in there is confusing too.
Yes.
And then put that paragraph at the bottom instead of.
Don't you have changes?
So first period tardies don't
and then
count at all
o'clock
towards
to 4 o'clock for the
anything else. So.
I think
there's a different penalty.
Yeah,
or there's a different penalty.
Yeah. It's a different
nothing
penalty
yet.
For it, yeah.
And then that
and it does after the third. It
subsequent
can,
first period.
It can go to.
Yeah.
To the. I think it's just the fines on that, and the meetings with the.
Okay. And the did you say we needed to change the times as well? They should
2 o'clock to 4 o'clock.
2 o'clock to 4 o'clock. Okay.
Okay, so we have a working draft here. Do we want to put on the record all the changes, and then we'll vote on the
modified and corrected version.
Does anybody else want to see it before we vote? So we'll be voting to approve an amendment to the tardy policy for Vanguard. And the proposed amendment is got some written changes on it.
I'll motion to approve the amended tardy policy.
I second it.
All in favor of the amendment? Say yes.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay, it passes unanimously. We can go ahead and add that to our school policy for tardies.
So, do we need to approve the tardy policy or just approve the amendment to?
Well, we had the tardy policy.
Yeah, the tardy policy. Just need to
approve
the amendment.
It was just amended from what it had been.
We'll approve the amendment.
Amended version. There we go.
Okay. Is there anything else on number 7? Okay, that concludes all of the items that are on the agenda. Is there anything else before we adjourn?
We don't need to go over Kathleen's UCA.
I added that when I was talking about.
Good job.
I wanted you to feel good at the end. So.
I motion to close.
One second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.